The opinions expressed in this show are the views of the host and not necessarily that of WTRW, 94.3 The Talker, or the Bold Gold Media Group.
The following presentation is brought to you by the host of the program, who is solely responsible for its content.
The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through Lee Baldwin & Company, LLC. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Good morning. I'm Nick Colarossi of NJC Investments, and this is your financial future. Coming to you from the corner office at the Bold Gold Radio Studios on 94.3 FM, The Talker. Each week, we discuss topics in business and investing that we hope are important to you. And of course, if there's ever anything you want covered that you don't hear on the show, drop us a line, let us know. We'd be happy to cover it. We're at njcinvestments.com, or you can always give us a call at 570-586-5030, 570-586-5030. On today's program, we're going to be discussing investments that you can make in your own community. Fun things, investments you could do around, investments for yourself, your family, your community. Then, we're going to be joined by a mutual fund manager, Brian Frank of the Frank Funds. And Brian is going to be discussing the Frank Value Fund. Now, this fund has beat the S&P over the last 10 years. He's also going to give us some insights, his market insights, and some of his forecasts for the future months. And that's going to be interesting. You don't want to miss that. Then we're going to wrap up with a Wall Street market recap. I'll give you my insights and thoughts of the future. Well, we're joined in the studio today with we're here with producer Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
I'm vertical and above the grass, man. Nothing else matters.
Are you enjoying your summer?
Yes, very much so. It has not been way too hot like most summers. It's actually a little cooler in the morning now.
It's not bad.
But I really enjoy it. How about you?
It's cooler at evening, too. I enjoy that for the sleeping. I don't have to turn the air conditioning on.
My electric bill is not too high. I'm very grateful for that.
Good. And I did pass, as always, on the way here, I passed the Palman Poultry Farms. And we've spoken about this before. People, uh-huh. Get ready, because the fall is coming. That first wave of turkeys, they're in the pen. They're fattening up, and that's how I know our summer is waning down. That and the fact that my kids are running up and down saying, how many more days of summer do we have? When do we go back to school? Enjoy it. We still have some weeks left. We still have some nice weather left. I hope everybody's getting out there and enjoying their summer. Now, Tom, a study came out this week that 45% of U.S. investors are putting off their own retirement planning in order to save for their child's college savings. And we talked about last week when we had our assistant, my assistant, Claire Barifaldi, in the office. We spoke about the differences between retirement planning and college planning. Those are your two biggest investments you'll ever make. And that's what we specialize in. That's what NJC Investments does. That's what we specialize in. And if you missed last week's program, we spoke about both and how you need to do both. You can't just focus. You can't focus just on yourself. You have to take care of the kids, but you can't just focus on the kids either.
And that was what you just read. That study is that there's a lot of investors that are neglecting themselves on purpose to focus more on their kids.
And I think the reason for that is probably because they get started too late. So okay. they have to catch up. So mm-hmm. they have to wait on them their own plans and start dumping into their plans. So they're and start investing into their children's plans.
Right.
I think it's so important, if you can, if you're in this arena as we are, start soon. If you have young children, I started my 529 plans for my children at age zero, a couple of weeks after they were born. Now, if you can do that, great. If your children are already a little bit grown, that's okay. It's never too late to start. The earlier you start, the better. But I just want to recap what we gave you last week on a hypothetical for college planning that Claire Barifaldi did for us last week. If you start right after the child is born and you put down $5,000 and then you just add $300 a month, when that child is ready to go to college, that account in this hypothetical illustration, of course, we can't predict the future. This is going back the last 18 years. When that child is ready to enter college. In this particular circumstance, that child had $140,000, almost $141,000 in that account. And that is huge. Huge to get that the kids started in college, because it's estimated that college is going to cost anywhere, a four-year college by the time they're ready, anywhere between $170,000 and $400,000.
It's crazy.
And it doesn't go down. Mm-hmm. So get started soon. I think that is so important. And the last point I want to make on that is that you want to set up that $300 or whatever you can do, whether it's $100 or more than $300. You want to set that up to automatically come from your bank account. Because if you don't, there's always a better reason to spend that money of, oh, I need it this month for that. Oh, I need it. And it never gets done. I see it every day.
And what I've noticed is that when you have it set up that way to automatically come from your account, within 2 months, you forget it's even happening.
And you do. Mm-hmm. And you do. I do dollar cost averaging in my own accounts. I highly, highly recommend it to all my clients and anyone listening out there. If you do it that way, it's going to take care of itself over time. Trust me on that one. Well, in just a few minutes, I'm very excited. We're going to be joined by a real-life mutual fund manager, Brian Frank of the Frank Funds. He's taking time out of his very, very busy schedule to appear here on Northeastern Pennsylvania's number one financial hour, Tom. And we're looking forward to have him here on Your Financial Future. We're very proud of the fact that he's coming on our station. I'm excited to ask him some questions and see what his predictions for the future, for the rest of the year are in our markets.
I'm going to rat you out for our listeners.
Yeah.
When Nick was telling me that Brian Frank, he was as giddy as a schoolgirl.
That's right.
He was so excited about Brian.
That's right.
So this is definitely going to be interesting, and it's going to be kind of cool.
You know, I'm excited for a couple of reasons. Where else are you going to see, where else are you going to have a mutual fund manager in this area come on to a local radio program and give you his insights? You know, maybe Madeira. I don't know. I know he gets some great guests, but on a financial show, only here, my friend, only here. And this fund, the Frank Value Fund, has beaten the S&P over the last 10 years, and he has taken a lot less risk to do it. It's a value fund. He's going to go through his investment techniques and some stock picking techniques as well. And I think everybody out there will find it very interesting. And Tom, you may even get something out of it.
I'm sure I will.
Tom will be on the edge of his seat today. I can always tell how the show's going. If I look over and Tom is looking at me, I know he's getting something out of the show. So I know everybody out there, I hope everybody out there is also getting something out. If Tom is playing with his iPod or something, which he does from time to time, I know I need to pause, slow down, and review.
Yeah, see, now he's throwing me under the bus. Well, now I've got to pay attention no matter what.
It goes both ways.
Touche.
Tom is the glue that holds this show together. I appreciate everything you do. You know that.
I know.
There wouldn't be a Your Financial Future without you.
Well, I appreciate that. Grateful to be able to do that. Wow. And it goes both ways, my friend.
Well, it's a goal of mine to always have on this program from time to time to be able to bring you this high caliber guest like this, guests that can inform you, guests that can give you valuable information for your own financial planning. And as I said, I'm really excited to talk to Brian. I know you'll get a lot out of this. I know there'll be a lot to take away. I met Brian at a broker dealer meeting that he came to and gave a presentation, our broker dealer. And just now I looked over and I saw Tom's face, and I guess I better stop and explain a broker dealer. Is that correct, Tom?
Boy, are you good.
When you're in a major financial house, as I was, I have 10 years experience in a major wirehouse. When you're in a major wirehouse, the likes of Morgan Stanley or a Merrill Lynch, everything is in-house. So you're the broker, you're the low man on the totem pole. And then there's the broker dealer, and the broker dealer is in charge of making sure the statements are correct, making sure everything goes out right, making sure you're in compliance with everything that you do. And then there's the where the money is held. And when you're in a large financial institution like that, you're everything is in-house. So if it was Merrill Lynch would be the broker dealer and would hold the money. I'm an independent now. I was for 10 years in a major house. Now I'm independent. I'm like a subcontractor. And the way it works for us is I'm the broker. I take care of all the client business. The broker dealer, our broker dealer is named Lee Baldwin. Lee Baldwin and company out of upstate New York. And Lee is in charge of making sure everything is compliant for our company. And then our money is held at Fidelity Investments, which is the largest retirement planning house there is, safer than any of them, probably safer than all the banks out there. So I'm really pleased of the structure that we're in right now. So at our broker-dealer meeting, Brian did come in and give a great presentation about his fund. I thought he was wonderful at explaining how he picked stocks and telling us what was good, what was bad in the upcoming market. So that's why we're excited to have Brian coming on. Now, I do, of course, I still have an open invitation, Tom, out to Paul McCulley of PIMCO. And you remember, we spoke of Paul McCulley of PIMCO fame just a few weeks back. He's the chief economist at the Pacific Asset Management Company out there in Newport Beach, California.
I don't think there's a show that goes by where PIMCO's not mentioned.
That's right. PIMCO is known as the world's largest bond managers. They're very good at it. You have Bill Gross, the CEO, known as the bond king. They manage more bond money than anybody else. They've had their good years, their bad years, a little bit in the news lately for some turmoil at PIMCO. I think Paul McCulley had taken a hiatus a few years back from PIMCO, and he's recently rejoined PIMCO, and he's now their chief economist, one of the smartest guys you'll ever meet. He was being groomed, I think, in his time off to be Federal Reserve chairman. And I'm telling you, he would have been better than Ben Bernanke. He would have been better than Janet Yellen, in my opinion, my humble opinion. He's that good. So anyway, Paul McCulley has purchased a home in Waverly.
I play disc golf in Waverly.
You do. My offices, NJC Investment offices, are right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And 281 East Grove Street. If you ever want to stop by, say hello. We're at 281 East Grove Street in the heart of the financial district in Clark's Green, Pennsylvania. Beautiful Clark's Green. Anyway, Paul, you have an open. I'm sure he listens every week. Paul, you have an open invitation. Anytime you want to come on the show, we'd be happy to hear what you have to say. You can tell us all the insights of PIMCO these days. You want to tell us what's going on in the markets, the global economic markets. You can even tell us what went on between Bill Gross and Muhammad El Arian with that little turmoil you had. We're happy. Tom, I think we can even send a car for him if he'd like to come in.
I'll go get him. I'll go get him myself. He wants to ride in the back of the pickup. Better yet,
no.
he can sit on the pillion of the motorcycle.
No, we'll get it.
So 20 minutes away from here. That's where Waverly is. It's bam.
I'm sure he'd enjoy that, but I'd send a car for him. Again, you're listening to Nick Colarossi. This is Your Financial Future on 94.3 FM, The Talker. We're coming up in a few short minutes. We're going to be joined by Brian Frank of the Frank Funds, a mutual fund that has beaten the S&P 500 for the last 10 years by taking less risk. I think you'll enjoy that. But first, I always like to start with a few hot tips. And these hot tips are some of the best investments you can ever make. Investing in yourself, investing in your family, and investing in your community. Now, let's start with yourself this time. We usually start with some different items for the family. This is something, if you're listening to this show right now, if you're tuned into this show, it's obvious that you're interested in learning about finances and investing. Unless you left a dial on from Madeira and Glenn Beck and you just happen to pop it on, I hope you're still listening. Stay with us. We have a great show today. But if you're listening now, you want to be educated. Well, I came across a great advertisement in this week's Wall Street Journal that I wanted to let you know about. It's from the Great Courses series. It's actually like a college lecture format, how the stock market works. You can get it on CD. You can get it on DVD. It's by Ramon P. DeGennaro, an award-winning professor in banking and finance. I believe he's out of Tennessee. And it talks about trading, investing basics, strategies and common mistakes investors make, risk, expected returns, diversification, tax shelters, Roth IRAs, and everything. It goes through all the nuts and bolts. It's basically investing 101. It gives you a great background in investing. I'm going to order it just to strengthen my background as well. You can never stop learning in this business, Tom. But right now, it's at a 70% off discount until August 21st. So act now on that. The great courses, you can call them at 1-800-832-2412 or go to this, thegreatcourses.com/7WS. It's trading at the price. I'm so used to the stock market. DVDs are only $59.95 if you have to see the guy. It was $219, and the CDs that were $149, you could even listen to these in the car. They're only $39.95 for a complete Wall Street education. So there's a great idea for you. Not too much money. Gives you a great background if you want to do this yourself, or if you want to be with the advisor. It gives you a common ground to talk with your advisor on. Next thing I want to talk about would be the thing we talked about last week, Tom, is the World Series. Little League World Series
down
is going
on. Williamsport.
I saw the parade this week on TV, and the games are going on right now. 16 teams from all over the world hit Williamsport, PA this week. There's games every night. Best of all, you can take your family, your kids, your grandkids. Best of all, it's absolutely free, people. Go down to Williamsport. It's, of course, first come, first serve, so you want to get there early. But what a great show in our own backyard. I highly recommend that you get to Williamsport over the next few days.
Those kids are good.
They're tremendous.
Holy cow. I played Little League when I was younger. I was never that good.
I'm the same way. I wish I were, but I'm going to sneak one last one in. Do I have time for one last one, Tom?
One more, yep.
Okay, we'll go quickly here. Again, you're listening to NJC Investments, your financial future on 94.3 FM, The Talker. The last one I want to talk about, the Toyota Sports Complex. It's been called the Cole Street Ice Rink. Have you been there, Tom?
No.
Do you skate at all, Tom?
No.
I don't either. But my son does. They just reopened this week. This past week, they just reopened the sports complex for the fall season for ice skating. And ice skating, they have free skates on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The prices are $6 and $7. If you want to rent skates, it's $3 extra. You can go down. They have learn to skate classes, figure skating classes, learn to play hockey classes. They have hockey leagues ranging from little kids all the way up to adults. They even have adult learn to skate classes. So there you go, Tom. If you want to go and learn to skate, you can join their adult learn to skate classes, which I've always thought of doing. I'm just afraid of breaking a hip or an elbow these days.
An ankle.
They even have curling, Tom. And that became, there was, after the Olympics, you should have saw the lines for the curling club. I don't know if it was just because of the Olympics or because
probably
of the pants that they wore in the Olympics. They do have cool pants. You got to admit that. I had a quick story. When my son, who is in hockey, went from learn to skate to learn to play, and he got to hold that hockey stick and bring it, and daddy dressed him in his new hockey jersey and everything. He went there, he was so excited. I was scared for him. He went out there and he's on the ice, and I'm afraid for him. He'll do fine. The kids were a little bigger. Well, I got him all suited up, I put him out on the ice, and he starts falling. And he takes a couple more skates and he starts falling. And every three times he fell. And they're picking him up. He's picking himself up. And I felt horrible. I'm like, oh my God, maybe it's too soon to get him out there. Well, after a while, the instructor picks him up under the arms, skates him over to me. And I'm sure he's going to say, you know, he's not ready for this. Mm-hmm. Or, no, that's not what he said. He looked at me. He said, hey, Dad, you got his skates on the wrong feet. True story. True story. He never let me forget that either.
I'm laughing with you.
Thank you, Tom. Well, once we got his right foot on his right and his left on the, he was fine, and he's doing just great these days. And that's the Toyota Sports Complex at Cole Street. Go down, learn to skate if you don't know how to skate, but they're open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, free skates. Go check it out.
You can put the skates on the correct feet.
That's the most important thing, as we know. We're at a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Brian Frank of the Frank Funds. He's going to talk about his mutual funds. He's also going to talk about the markets. So please don't leave us. We're at 94.3 FM. This is your financial future. Stay with us.
Did you know the average person will spend 21 years in retirement? Are you saving enough for those golden years? Hi, I'm Nick Colarossi, a certified retirement counselor at NJC Investments with over 20 years of experience. NJC Investments specializes in writing financial plans to help take the mystery out of your future finances. We offer a variety of services, including education on your 401k allocations, simplifying your retirement plan rollovers, or even setting up a college savings plan for your children or grandchildren. We invite you to visit our website, NJCinvestments.com. There you will find over 25 financial planning calculators that will project what you are currently saving and where there may be shortfalls. You can even calculate the role Social Security may play in your retirement income. If you find that you have a shortfall, NJC Investments can help you fill the gaps. Call us at 570-586-5030 or visit us at NJCinvestments.com. NJC Investments, helping to take the mystery out of your financial future.
Securities offered through Lee Baldwin & Company, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC.
Welcome back to Your Financial Future on 94.3 FM, The Talker. I'm Nick Colarossi, and I'm so excited right now to be joined by a mutual fund manager. This is Brian Frank on the line of the Frank Funds. He's the president and portfolio manager. He's the CEO and the CIO, I guess, Brian. He specializes in U.S. equities. He has a 10-year track record on the Frank Value Fund, a 10-year track record of outperforming the S&P 500. And I've looked at this fund, and it takes less risk than the S&P 500. So just a great history for this fund. He also advises separate accounts. He has a Cayman-registered offshore mutual fund, and he also advises a limited partnership. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
That's great to have you. I appreciate you coming on. You've had this fund since, is it 2003?
Our advisor, our company's been around since 2003, but the mutual fund's inception is July of 2004. So we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary.
Congratulations on that, and congratulations on beating the S&P 500. That is an achievement.
Thank you. Yeah, and unfortunately, a smaller percentage of managers are able to do it over the long term, and we're pretty humbled to be one of those managers.
Yeah, I applaud you. So, Brian, tell me a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and then tell me how did you get into managing a mutual fund? Where did that come about? I read a little bit about you have a computer background. I didn't know that before. How do you get to be a mutual fund manager?
I think it's a love of numbers and a love of business. So I've been around numbers my whole life. You mentioned a lot of my family are computer scientists, so there's a lot of math and programming there.
Tom loves math.
I'm sorry?
Tom loves math when we talk about
math. Yeah, I love math as much as laying in a bathtub full of scissors.
Continue, Brian. I'm sorry.
No problem. And because of the tech boom in the late 90s, a lot of my family are entrepreneurs as well. And even before that, my grandfather is actually an Italian immigrant who came over here, fought in World War II, and started a restaurant in northern New Jersey. So that's where I'm from. I come from entrepreneurs and computer scientists, and there's always been a love of numbers and business. And it just was kind of a natural fit. In the late 90s, I started reading a lot of Warren Buffett, Benjamin Graham, his teacher. And those guys always talk about the business behind the stock price. And that makes a lot more sense to me than looking at trends and charts and momentum and just trying to guess with all the analysts what's going to happen in the next 3 months. Instead, you know, I wanted to get involved with a great business and buy it at the right price, preferably when other people are panicking and the price is low is when you get in, and just hang on to it for a while and watch the business grow and pay attention to what the managers are saying. So it was kind of a natural thing for me to be buying stocks. And then the way I got involved in the mutual fund business was more of necessity. I was managing a portion of my money and my family's money in early 2000. And because I had that love of Warren Buffett, he doesn't buy a lot of tech stocks.
Sure.
And he really shunned the whole bubble back then. And he looked foolish in the 90s, but then when it turned, he looked brilliant. So the money I was managing for my family didn't have any tech or telecom stocks. And before you knew it, my grandfather wanted to bring over the family office under my management. So in 2003, I started an investment advisor managing that family money. And I kind of tapped out the family market. So we're not a total silver spoon family, but it was enough to have the dream of managing money. And I found, this was before Sarbanes-Oxley in 2004, which is basically a lot of mutual fund regulation that came down the pike and made it more expensive. Before that happened, I found a relatively cheap way to do it. I got my public track record going and just managed from there throughout the financial crisis. And we did well. We did better than most. Like you said, we beat the S&P. And we made a business out of it. We've been marketing the fund since 2009, and we now have clients in 45 states, so it's going great. And it's kind of just an organic, you know, American dream story.
And that's a great story. So it was actually your grandfather that actually helped you get everything going. Is that your Italian grandfather?
That's him.
Well, see, how come I didn't have a grandfather like that? I'm Italian, Tom. That's a great story, Brian. That really is. It's a success. It's American success story. What process? Here's what a lot of my clients ask me. You know, you went over a little bit of your stock picking, kind of coming from the Warren Buffett ideals there. What process do you know? How do you buy a stock? But even more important, how do you know when to sell a stock? You're buying and selling all the time. How do you know when to sell?
Mm-hmm. So it's, for us, we really emphasize taking the emotion out of stock picking. You know, the numbers are coming across the screen and Jim Cramer's jumping up and down and screaming. It's an emotional place. You know, it's your money. But what we do is a quantitative process. So we take all the numbers of the company. How much did they earn last year? How much did they earn in the recession? How much did they earn in a boom period? And basically try and buy it at a low multiple relative to that number. But then on the sell side, like you asked, we try and sell it when it's, you know, about in the middle to high end of its range. So you can see where a company trades relative to its income over the last 10 years. And, you know, it sounds so simple, but buy low and sell high. It's a lot harder to do.
Sure.
Emotionally. And, you know, when you're buying low, there's usually something wrong with the company. And when you're selling high, there's usually nothing wrong with the company and everything's going great. And emotionally, you actually want to buy more. But that's actually the worst thing to do. We often equate it to going to the supermarket. If milk is on sale, you buy milk. If they double the price of milk, then you probably buy orange juice. You don't buy more of the things at the supermarket when they double the price. Why should you be buying more stocks when they double the price?
That's a great analogy.
It really is. Brian, I'm going to say this. You sound just like Warren Buffett. You do. And that's a huge compliment.
Thank you very much. Yeah, of course I take that as a huge compliment.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Did I read that your forward PE on your funds, price earnings ratio, is about 7% versus the benchmark of about 20%? Or am I misreading that?
That sounds about right. Yeah, I think what you're doing is you're inverting. You're taking the EP instead of the PE.
Oh, okay.
What we do is very similar to that. The reason we invert it is because you can compare it to a bond. So right now, if you try and buy a 10-year U.S. government bond, you're making about 2.5%. When we're buying equities, we want to be making about 10 to 12% on operating income. And now you can directly compare that to a bond. So you need to earn a lot more when you're buying equities because they're more risky.
Sure.
Theoretically, Uncle Sam is going to pay the bills on your bond, but maybe if you buy a stock, you know, that company could experience a lot of competition. You know, their products could become obsolete. So you try and earn more. And that's the really difficult thing about this market today. Like you said, the EP on the S&P, I think it's closer to 6 or even 5. You're just not earning enough earnings on these companies relative to what you're paying. But since I'm a stock picker, the Frank Value Fund holds maximum 30 companies. We don't have to buy the S&P 500. We don't have to buy, you know, hundreds of stocks like most mutual funds do. We've hand-selected the few that actually still are good deals and are cheap right now. So there's a very big difference between the valuation of our portfolio and, like you said, the S&P.
Would you consider yourself a deep value at this point?
Deep value, I mean, it's funny. There's so many different categorizations of value. What we do is more on the earnings side.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to, it is taking a page out of Warren Buffett's book, or many pages, a chapter or two.
It's okay to steal a little bit, right?
What's that?
I said it's okay to steal a little bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially because guys like Buffett now are so big, like he calls it hunting elephants. He can only buy companies like Burlington Northern and IBM, you know, the biggest of the big, because he's got too much money. So So we're doing it on the smaller level there. We're buying some small caps and some mid caps in the fund that once you get successful in this business and you start managing so much money, you can't really touch these smalls and mids. So it's great for new guys like myself who are, you know, copying Warren Buffett essentially. We don't have to compete with him though because he's too big.
Now, along those lines, you're saying companies that smaller companies, you recently purchased a company called Black Hawk Network. I've never heard of that company. I would never know to go out and buy that company. What was your investment strategy there?
So number one, it's a high quality company that's trading at a cheap price. That's always the number one in my book, but I doubt most people have heard of this company because in order to find value in today's market, I think almost every single stock in the S&P is expensive right now. I think Wow. almost every single stock in the Russell 2000 is expensive right now. And BlackRock Network is in neither one of those indexes. The reason it's not is it's actually something called a spinoff. This came out of Safeway, the grocery chain, and it was their gift card division. So Safeway, along with many other retailers, got the bright idea to sell gift cards about 10 years ago, but they came up with their own little company within a company called BlackRock Network. It was such a raging success that they actually spun it off. So they didn't want to sell it. They basically gave it to their own shareholders. So if you own Safeway stock in February, you would then own Safeway stock and a couple shares of Black Hawk Network. They literally gave it to their shareholders. It's a common practice called spinoffs. It's inefficient, though, because many people that own Safeway want to own a grocery store. They want nothing to do with a gift card company. So a lot of people just sell the stock as soon as they get it. It's kind of like found money. But when you're just selling something and you don't care about the price, inevitably, a lot of these spinoffs come out very cheap. So in an expensive market, BlackRock came out very cheap, and we were able to pick it up and pounce on it. You know, we're screening the market every day, and we see when these spinoffs are coming out, and that was one that we had been tracking. So it's a fantastic company. It's been growing very quickly. They just got they won the Home Depot account last year. So all the gift cards you see in Home Depot are run by BlackRock. They're partnered with Amazon, so it's a tiny company, meaning it's about $1 billion market cap. So the big guys can't buy it, but we can. But it is also has a good competitive advantage because they are partnered with such big business.
You know, I think that you make a great point here. This is why you need a money manager at times, where you can't just be out picking all of your own stocks. It's fun to pick your own individual stocks as an individual investor. But how many of us individual investors would ever know to buy Black Hawk Networks? I would say very, very few.
Well, it's fun to pick your stocks when the market's going up, but we always worry about what happens when the market goes down. And, if you look up the Frank Value Fund on Morningstar right now, we really haven't outperformed in the last 5 years because this bull market is more than 5 years old. So if you take the beginning of the bull market to the end, we've actually outperformed it. But most of our outperformance came in the first few months when people really didn't believe it was a bull market.
Right.
But now, you know, anytime in the last 5 years, you pick a stock, you buy it, most likely it's going up. But we know the stocks are a volatile asset class.
They don't go up forever.
They go up and down a lot more than bonds, you know, than real estate, than even some commodities. So it's what you do when that down market comes that really matters. And we're preparing for it every single day, you know, by buying things that aren't in the index like BlackRock, making sure they're cheap. We're allowed to hold cash. We're about 25% cash right now, which is the highest we've ever been.
That's more than most mutual funds by far.
Correct. Yeah, the average fund, I think, holds about 1% cash. Yeah. We've been there before. At the beginning of this bull market, we had 1% cash. But now it's difficult to find things to replace. So, yeah, it's the professional with the process, as I call it, like, we apply the same metrics to every market, bull, bear, you know, economy growing, economy shrinking. We always have to have something safe that does well, that's, of course, trading at a cheap valuation. And you don't really get credit for it until the market turns. But as we know, over the last, you know, my last 13 years of doing this, the market goes up and down. It just hasn't gone down for more than 5 years.
Right, but you have to be prepared for both sides. Listen, sure. Brian, we're coming up on a short break. I hope you'll stay with us. We're talking to Brian Frank of the Frank Capital Partners, the Frank Funds, and he's giving us his insights on the Frank Value Fund and some of his stock picking strategies. This is Your Financial Future on 94.3 FM, The Talker. Nick Colarossi, please stay with us.
The importance of saving at a young age is often overlooked, and many young adults feel they aren't able to set aside any money right now. Finding ways to save and budget can be easier than you think. Hi, my name is Claire Barifaldi from NJC Investments. As a young investor myself, I understand the challenges of getting started in the market. Let's face it, for some it can be intimidating, but it doesn't have to be. Let us help you establish a financial plan that works with your current and future financial needs. Dollar cost averaging is a great way to begin investing. With dollar cost averaging, a specific amount is invested periodically. You pick the amount and how often you want to invest. Don't wait to start setting aside money for your future, because the time to start is now. Visit our website at njcinvestments.com or give us a call at 570-586-5030. That's 570-586-5030. NJC Investments, helping to take the mystery out of your financial future.
Securities offered through Lee Baldwin & Company, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC.
Welcome back to Your Financial Future on 94.3 FM, The Talker. I'm Nick Colarossi, and we are speaking with Brian Frank today. Brian Frank of the Frank Capital Partners. Brian's talking to us about the Frank Value Fund, a fund that has beaten the S&P over the last 10 years by taking less risk, in my opinion. And Brian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Thank you. You mentioned something, and you mentioned this when I saw you speak at the Scranton Country Club. You mentioned that you were having difficulty buying stocks. Now, this is going back a few months when things were very, very good in the stock market. You were telling us all that you were having trouble finding value stocks. Is that still the case? And if so, when do you think that will change?
Yeah, it's unfortunately still the case, Nick, because even though the market's kind of bumped along the top right now, the metrics that we're using, you know, and I'm trying to speak generally here. Sure. There's a few stocks that I'm tracking that I would love to buy, you know, high quality companies, you know, all the Warren Buffett stuff. But to fit my metrics, those companies need to come down another 20 to 25%. You know, that's not saying the whole market needs to come down 20 to 25%, but if I could just get a few names to have that kind of correction, then I would get interested again. Because until then, it's just a quantitative thing. There are always great businesses out there. There are always things that are growing, but it's just a price thing for me. In order to take that risk, you know, to buy equity in your company, that, you know, by all counts is probably a great company, we still need to clear certain risk metrics. And as the market's just gone up for 5 years or more right now, we're not clearing those right now, and we need a little bit of a correction.
Okay. What do you think of the economy now? Do you think we're going to see that correction? Do you see the economy picking up through the course of the year?
I think the economy is going to do what it's been doing the last 5 years, which is just kind of bump along. So the funny thing that I think a lot of participants forget is, in 2009, when the market bottomed and the S&P was up 20%, I think our fund was up 50%, the economy is actually still getting worse in 2009.
Sure.
So you could see an economy that finally starts to get better and, you know, significantly and creates more than 200,000 jobs a month. I hope that happens, you know, for the sake of the country. But you could see a stock market actually decline based on that news, because the stock market is focused on what the Fed is doing.
Right.
The Fed is going to stop tapering, meaning they're going to stop their bond buying program.
Sure. They've been doing that now, right, for month after month.
Right, and it ends in October. So keep an eye on October. Something interesting could happen there. At least from the momentum point of view, the momentum is certainly stalled right now. And if it goes out the window in October, then, yeah, maybe we could finally get that correction. A correction is a healthy thing. And it's something you should take advantage of, not fear. But we just haven't had one in a very long time.
So it's over 2.5 years. Now, give odds on this. I know I'm putting you on the spot, Brian. Do you think we'll see that long-awaited 10% correction that we haven't had between now and October? And if we do, let's just say we get that. I wouldn't be surprised myself. But if we do get that, would you, all things being the same, use that as a buying opportunity?
I think there's some pretty good odds you would see it by the end of the year. Yes, because number one, all the geopolitical strife that's going on. Number two, the end of the tapering program. And number three, the economy really has to prove something here, because we had that negative print. The second quarter GDP is actually negative. If you get two of those in a row, that's a recession, but it looks like we're bouncing back. A lot of that negative GDP was due to the harsh winter weather in the Northeast.
Right.
So we got to bounce back and then some. Otherwise, a lot of people aren't making earnings right now. We're seeing a lot of profit margins come down. This earnings season has been mixed. So, yes, I think there's a chance, and it's a pretty good one. And, yes, I absolutely will use that as a buying opportunity. But you have to buy the right stuff. You can't buy one of those high flyers when it corrects 10%, because it might correct a lot more than that. But a nice, solid value stock that's close to our metrics, getting that correction will be a good entry point.
So you think it's really a stock picker's market at this point? You just can't play the indices.
I know I drive the index people crazy when
that's
I say
okay.
That,
we don't have any index people friends. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think buying the S&P today, buying any index or ETF today, is just like buying in the year 2000. In my opinion, the valuations are similar. The median valuation is actually higher. I know we had a lot of bubble stocks in 2000. We don't have a lot of that today, but the average stock is quite expensive today, even compared to that lofty level. And in 01 and 02, the index is corrected more than 40%. But a lot of value guys, including yours truly, we were flat to up in that environment. So it's definitely a stock picker's market. We got the cash. We have a lot of value stocks. And we're just being patient right now and looking silly while the market goes up. But I'm much happier to look silly than to lose money.
When a client comes into my office, they always say we want to be aggressive. We want to go up. We want to catch the market until the first dip in the market. Then they want to be protective. So I think you're doing the right thing with your value fund. I really do.
Yeah, we stick to the process. Trying to predict where the market's going to go and when it's impossible in my opinion. So if you have the numbers and the process and you stick to it. My process is, be very careful right now. And my process said get really aggressive in 2009. So it's worked over the last 13 years and 10 years in the fund. So we'll keep trusting it.
Well, I hope if things do correct, and we'll have you back later in the year, and you can tell me all your things are pointing to be aggressive again, I hope. Maybe that'll be the case, right? You never know.
Yeah. The stock market can change very quickly.
It certainly can. Brian, I want to change gears a little bit here, shift gears a little bit on interest rates. Interest rates are basically at zero. The 10-year Treasury today is 2.4%, hovering there. It's the lowest point of the year, I believe. I'm putting you out on the limb here again on what's your prediction on interest rates? When do you think we'll actually see hiking from the Fed? And do you think market rates will go up in advance of that?
Oh, that is a million-dollar question.
That is, for everyone. That's why I asked you.
The way that I see it, the Fed, they're kind of in a corner because I don't think they would want to raise rates.
The economy's not strong enough yet, right?
The economy's not strong enough, and they're holding all these bonds. All right, they're not going to be buying any new bonds come October, but they have a $4 trillion balance sheet now, I think, up from less than $2 trillion before the financial crisis. So if you're holding bonds, you don't want rates to go
up.
That's
for certain.
The price of the bonds goes down.
We've spoken about that here on the show, and I never thought about that with the Fed. But we've spoken on it for our individual investors. Right. You don't want to be holding a lot of bonds if rates are rising.
Warren Buffett called the Fed the world's largest hedge fund. So you got to watch out for that. And it's difficult though, because people are going to there's going to be a flight to bonds, the flight to safety, which could drive rates down even further if things get worse geopolitically or if the stock market corrects.
So you're not going to go out there and tell me when Janet Yellen's going to, that day that Janet Yellen's going to put the bond market in a tailspin by raising rates.
My prediction is that the decision will be taken away from the Fed and the market will make that
decision.
That's
what I thought too. That's what
I
thought.
You can see the market raise rates a lot quicker than the Fed can react. Speaking frankly, they're a bunch of eggheads with no business experience. The Princeton, Harvard guys there, they've never run businesses. They think they're pulling the magical levers there and driving people to do things, but I think they're just creating a lot of risk. By keeping rates this low, people feel forced. You mentioned people coming into your office, Nick, and wanting to buy things. You want to do that because you can't get a good CD at the bank, or you can't get a good rate anywhere. So, hey, maybe I should buy some ETF that pays me a big dividend. That's just driving people to take risk.
Too much risk.
And that never ends well. And I don't think you can control that from the ivory tower of the Fed. I think, inevitably when businesses miss earnings, stock prices come down pretty heavily. We've seen a lot of that this week in some pretty high-profile misses as well.
Sure did. The earnings are getting volatile. The stocks are getting volatile right after. Hey, you're listening to Your Financial Future with Nick Colarossi on 94.3 FM, The Talker. We're here today with Brian Frank of the Frank Capital Partners, and Brian's giving us some information on the Frank Value Fund. Everyone should take a look at that, see if that fits into your investment strategies. And Brian's also given us some great market insight, and I really appreciate you being here, Brian.
No problem. You're welcome.
In your recent letter to shareholders, you said this: return expectations are being very low right now for index investors. Return expectations, you talk about. You expect returns over the next how long to stay in a very low range? And in fact, and I'm going to say one other thing. That sounds a lot like what PIMCO was saying. We talk about PIMCO a lot on the show. Paul McCulley just bought a house up here in our area. So we talk about PIMCO a lot. But PIMCO is saying the same thing. What do you expect the returns to be in the markets going forward? What kind of range are we looking at? And how long will that range continue?
Well, PIMCO does good research. We follow John Hussman of the Hussman Funds. He does good research, and all those numbers say the same thing. Over the next 7 to 10 years, the return expectations on the S&P are about 2.5%, and the return expectations on the Russell 2000, the small stocks, is close to zero or even negative.
Wow. So what do you do?
I would not be an indexer here. I'm pounding the table, pleading, you know, our clients, your listeners, everybody, don't buy the ETFs. Don't buy your indexes. They're just return expectations. Basically, you take that EP, you know, you inverse your PE.
Right.
You get the EP, which gives you that rate, which is about 5-6% right now. And you look at history. So what PIMCO does, what Hussman does is, okay, and you know, in 1980, that EP was 15%. The next 10 years, the stock market did, you know, about 15% annualized. In 2000, that EP was about this. It was about 4-6%. The next 10 years, the market was negative. So it's a reliable long-term indicator. It does not tell you what's going to happen the next quarter or anything like that. But if you're a long-term investor and you're buying stocks here, yeah, on the S&P, 0 to 2%. So you have to, what we can do individually by picking, right now we have about 22 companies in the fund. The other 8 slots are reserved for cash right now. Our return expectations on those 22 companies is closer to 10%. So we've picked, you know, the 22 stocks that are cheap, that are very high quality, that can weather a recession or anything that comes. That's always our standard criteria. It's just that they're wildly different in terms of valuation than the indexes right now. And that was not the case 3 years ago. 3 years ago, the return expectations on the fund were similar to the S&P. It was hard to differentiate yourself in a cheap market. But now it's easy to differentiate in an expensive market.
Well, we're listening to Brian Frank. Brian is with us here on Your Financial Future with Nick Colarossi on 94.3 FM, The Talker. We're coming up on a short break. When we come back, we're going to be discussing what can you do? How can you make money? Brian's telling us the ranges. What can we do to beat those ranges? And I'm going to have some questions for Brian when we return. Going into this break, I'd just like to thank the people at Gateway Ford who is sponsoring us today. Great people at Gateway Ford. Get up there, see them, look at the new lineup of Fords. Just a wonderful bunch of people up there. Thank you, Gateway Ford. Stay with us. Nick and Brian will be right back.
Looking to buy a new vehicle? Having trouble deciding where to go? Even deciding what you want to buy? Buying a new or used vehicle can be tough. To make it easy, go to Gateway Ford in Tunkhannock. For 43 years, Gateway Ford in Tunkhannock has been offering their customers quality service. Their low overhead allows them to pass the savings on to you. Other dealerships say it. Gateway does it. Gateway Ford believes in you, the customer. At Gateway, there is no high pressure to buy, only a focus on you and what you're looking for. They truly care about you and treat every customer with respect and dignity, the old-fashioned way. Let your car mean something again. Go to Gateway Ford. Call them today, 1-800-585-7758. That's 1-800-585-7758. Online at gatewayfordmercury.com. Gateway Ford, 156 Tioga Street, Tunkhannock. They do things the old-fashioned way, where a handshake still means something. At Gateway Ford.
Welcome back to Your Financial Future on 94.3 FM, The Talker. I'm Nick Colarossi, and you're listening to a very special program today. We're here with Brian Frank of the Frank Family of Funds, and Brian has joined us to talk about the Frank Value Fund. The Frank Value Fund, of course, has beaten the S&P 500 over the last 10 years, and Brian takes less risk. If you've been listening to the last segment, you heard a little bit about his investment strategies. It's a little bit like Warren Buffett, that kind of strategy, but it's done very well for him over the last 10 years. Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you.
Hey, if people want to know more about your funds, where is there information out there that they can go? Is there a link out there that they can get to learn more about the Frank Frank family of funds?
Yes, our website is a great source of information. It's frankfunds.com, FRANKFUNDS.com.
Okay, frankfunds.com. That's easy enough. And get out there and look up anything about the Frank Funds. I encourage everybody listening. I've seen Brian speak before. I like his philosophy. He's doing the right thing in the market. He's protective when he should be protective. And when it's time to buy stocks, he buys stocks. So you're doing a great job. So congratulations to you on beating the S&P 500 again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I want to talk a little bit more about the Value Fund. I noticed, is Microsoft, you had Microsoft as your top holding the last time I checked. Is that still the case?
Yes, it is.
See, you would never think of Microsoft as a value fund, at least going back. You would never, that was like the growth giant. And now you consider it a value stock.
That's exactly what I said to myself when we bought Microsoft a few years ago. When I started in this business in the early 2000s, I never would have imagined that I would buy Microsoft, because in 2000, it was trading at like 40 times earnings. It wasn't anywhere near being a value stock.
It used to go up 5 points a day, if I recall.
Right. And then, unfortunately, it went down 5 points a year for the next 10 years.
Yeah, it just got dead money for a while.
And that's kind of what we talk about, the return expectations. Microsoft was part of that, you know, guilty as charged. If you bought the S&P in 2000, you were down 40% the next 2 to 3 years. If you bought Microsoft, you were down a similar amount. Its 10-year return was negative from 2000. But it went way too far the other way. This whole fear of people never using PCs again because of tablets, it reached a mania about 2 years ago. And that's when we bought Microsoft. Believe it or not, a large portion of their business has nothing to do with the PC. It's Microsoft Office and Microsoft Server. That's about two-thirds of their business. So it was priced 2 years ago that if nobody ever used Windows again, we believed we wouldn't lose any money. That's how cheap it was. But of course, PC sales are starting to stabilize now. They have a new CEO, which is great, and he's putting Microsoft Office onto iOS, which are all the Apple products,
sure,
which is going to be a huge growth area for them. So it's actually a company that's growing faster than the economy, and yet it's priced way cheaper than the average S&P stock.
And it's a cash cow. I mean, the cash is always flowing into that company, so they'll never be cash poor.
It's unbelievable how much cash they produce. I mean, it's couple billion dollars a quarter. I can't imagine that much money coming in.
They can basically take over the government. Right? They have more money than the government. Another one I noticed, and this is my favorite stock right now, and it's been for the last year. I was pounding the table on this stock when nobody would buy it. Apple. I saw Apple, the last quarterly report, I saw Apple as one of your holdings. Is that still the case? And make your case for that being a value stock.
Yeah, Apple's been in our top 10 since we bought it. Again, another stock I never thought I would buy. I watched Apple go from $12 a share to $700, and, you know, beating myself up the entire way for not buying
it. Me as well,
it,
but, me as well.
When it hit $700, the expectations were just way too high. Everybody thought it was going to grow at 20, 30% forever. But it's the law of large numbers. You can only sell an iPhone to every man, woman, and child on Earth, and it was priced as such that they would do more than that. So they missed a bunch of earnings reports. Their margins took a big hit. They experienced a lot of competition in tablets from Samsung, and the stock went from $700 to $400. So we got interested in the low 400s, which turned out to be near the bottom. And since then, they've just continued to dominate the iPhone market, the phone market. They're losing market share in tablets, but that it's a growth area. They're actually growing their tablet revenue, but they're a smaller percentage of all tablets sold because tablets are exploding as a marketplace. So it's similar to Microsoft. It's just minting cash. It's trading still, even after this run, it's trading well below the S&P average. and it's a strong competitive advantage. It's not quite as easy to switch from an iPhone as it was back in the day to switch from a BlackBerry or from a Motorola Razr, which were the hot phones before the iPhone came along.
Sure, they get you once they get you locked in, they want you on every one of their devices, and it's very difficult to get off. It's almost, Tom, it's almost like an addiction. Do you have an iPhone?
I thought you were do you have an addiction? Well, yeah, my iPhone actually is my addiction.
I see him over there all the time. But it's not, they do. They make it difficult for you to change vendors. But any other tech companies that you find as values here? Because it's unusual. It's very unusual to find tech companies like this. But I've seen it, too. I look at where they're trading, where their P.E. ratios are, and some of these companies are just on sale. And I'll tell you another thing. Back to Apple. When it was down at its low point, and you said this earlier, buy when it's low, sell when it's high. It's very, very simple. Hard to do. When it was at its low point, I was jumping up and down. I couldn't get anybody that wanted to go into Apple at that point. Now it seems like everybody, now that it's up how many percent, everybody seems to be interested in it again.
Yeah, that's human psychology, and that doesn't change. So you really have to go against your own psychology. I didn't want to buy it at 400 either, but the numbers told me to. You know, it's going down every day at that point, so it's really difficult to execute. And I think Buffett is getting more involved with technology companies with his investment in IBM when they become something like a cash cow. There's no longer a big land grab going on with something like IBM versus what's going on with Facebook. You know, the social networking, the fight is not over. There's still a lot of competition out there. But once you get more old and stodgy, I guess like Microsoft right. and Apple, you just start creating cash flow. And that's easier to value. It's easier to make money as an equity holder. You asked me one other tech stock. We also own NVIDIA.
Oh, I saw that.
It's a company, they make the graphics chips in like high-performance PCs. So a lot of gamers like to use NVIDIA chips, and a lot of graphic designers and artists like to use them. NVIDIA suffered along with all the other PC companies because you don't really have an NVIDIA chip in a tablet or in a smartphone. They suffered with that fear of PCs going away. We bought NVIDIA when it was 40% cash, meaning we paid $100 for the company, $40 were on the balance sheet in cash and no debt. So that's one of our big themes is we look at the balance sheet in investing. If you have a lot more cash than debt or tons of cash and no debt, as in this case, it's something called a margin of safety. It's very difficult for companies to go beyond 40 to 50% cash unless there's something seriously wrong with them, unless they're burning that cash. But as I mentioned, NVIDIA is a cash cow. It was cash positive when it was 40% cash, and now that we've made about 50% on the stock, it's still cash positive and they're still growing.
Well, Brian, we're coming up now on the end of the show, and you know, I get carried away here. I could talk to you all day long. I think your philosophies on investing are very, very interesting. You're doing a great job. Again, we're talking to Brian Frank of the Frank Capital Partners, and Brian has the Frank Value Fund that has beaten the S&P 500 over the last 10 years. You've heard a little bit about his investment philosophies, a lot like Warren Buffett, doing the right things. When times in the market are tough, and we're starting to see that, we're starting to see the volatility, this is the kind of fund you want to look at. Again, you can go to frankfunds, frankfunds.com. Is that correct, Brian?
That's correct.
You go to frankfunds.com, and you get all the information there that you need about the Frank Funds and see if that might make sense for your investment portfolio. Thank you so much, Brian, for joining us today. I'd love to have you back sometime. You're just very, very entertaining, very interesting to me.
You're welcome. I'd be happy to come back.
Well, good. Well, good luck the rest of the year. And we'll give you a call back maybe in the fall, see what happens over the next few months in the markets. And good luck to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Take care.
Thank you. You know, before we wind up, I did want to give you a market recap. We ran a little bit long with Brian, but it was such a good show. I enjoyed speaking to him. Again, that's Brian Frank, frankfunds.com. But a market recap, we peaked out on the markets July 24th. We had a bad week 2 weeks ago. This week, we've come back. We've come up about 2% on average in the markets. We're about at zero on the Dow for the year. NASDAQ and S&P, however, NASDAQ's up 6%, S&P about 5.3%. So we're starting to get the volatility up and down. Expect that for a while. As Brian said, there may be a 10% correction. As he also said, use that as a buying opportunity. I would expect something over the next couple months. He expects it. You never know. But if all remains the same, use that as a buying opportunity.
Well, that's going to be it for this week. This is Your Financial Future. I'm your host, Nick Colarossi. Remember, there's never a bad time to make a good investment. Of course, if there's any questions you had on today's program or any other financial topic, just drop me a line at nick@njcinvestments.com or call our offices at 570-586-5030. If you want to reach out to Brian Frank, it's frankfunds.com, or you can also call our offices. We'd be happy to forward you information. Thank you so much for listening on 94.3 FM The Talker. Please remember to stay tuned for Kevin Lynn coming up with the shale gas news. May God bless you and God bless America. Make it a great week. We'll see you next Saturday.
The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through Lee Baldwin & Company, LLC. Member FINRA, SIPC.